Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. This Friday, the 14th day of February, 2020. I'm David Ellis. Today's program goes until 1 o'clock. With me on the other side of the studio is Dennis Johnson, who is the producer and technical operator for today. So let's see what is going to come at us during the course of this program. I suppose there are some people who are waiting with bated breath to hear exactly what is going to be said by former Prime Minister Stewart when he speaks on Sunday. How many people will actually turn up to hear him speak is left to be seen, but that he should wait for 2 years to break his silence and to actually focus on the subject which has been promoted is particularly interesting. I see that in the newspaper today, the Nation, there is some reaction to that, some criticism by many. I'm sure, notwithstanding how many critics there are out there, you will find a couple of people who would certainly be supporting, perhaps even more than a couple. But I really wait to hear exactly what Mr. Stewart is going to say about the so-called lost years and how is he going to set about defending his own stewardship? The question is, though, why now? What is the motivation behind this particular speech at this time? What are its possible implications for the Democratic Labour Party, for the current leadership, for the aspiring leadership? Where does Mr. Stewart stand in terms of the existing leadership and those who may aspire to lead? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
I'm on the air?
You are.
Thank you. Well, my first topic was the same topic you start with, so I can't say much because you said it all.
What is your concern? I mean, you can say it differently.
My concern is what he could be saying. And the only thing he could be saying is that he's congratulating Miss Motley for having the economy in this kind of recovery state. And he had it on the verge of devaluation. So I think that is what he has to come and speak about. How she get it turned wrong in a matter of days.
Well,
can't be nothing more.
Sorry. I think that in politics you can anticipate that there will be a line of argument which says that things remain tough for average people in the country. There is an argument which I've heard from Dems which says things have gotten tougher for average Barbadians, that this economic program has not been easy, and that you may say whatever you want about the period of the Democratic Labour Party, the last period, but they sought as much as they could to cushion the impact of the economic austerity on the poor. That's what you can expect to hear.
Yes, but if that wasn't the case, where you have to take some of the tight measures, where would all of us would be today? You cannot handle devaluation. We saw Trinidad, we saw Guyana. What would we be doing today when we would have $5 today and then tomorrow 10 cents for your money?
So people
have to look at the devaluation process and looking at saving the country dollar. That was very paramount.
What do you think about the timing of this intervention by Mr. Stewart?
I think he now woke up, and I think he better go back to sleep. Because when he don't talk, it is better than when he talk. So after 2 years now, I think he better go and rest himself. And if he want to talk about his minister in America. Speak about his minister in America.
The question is he relevant today?
No.
Why not?
I think what he should do, keep doing what he is doing. Go and rest himself. Go and rest. It is nothing that he could say that people want to hear. He know what is dirty love. He ever think about getting beat dirty love? Not even 29 won.
But let me ask you this question. Isn't it possible that that's a factor that is motivating him? That having been beaten 30 love, he doesn't want to be remembered as the person who led the Democratic Labour Party into that kind of defeat and just left it there. It is possible.
Yeah, but who would want to bring him back into this economy now as a prime minister or a member of parliament? Who would want to bring him in? Only a mad person. Because after they lost the government, he said nothing. Probably if he had came out and said something before now, your question would be answered in the right way. But he never came out. You can't sit down and forget people for what you do that have been on proper footing. How could you do that? You leave us in a stranglehold. If the lady didn't win that election and stepped in, and they had got back the government, what would have become of us? All the taxes that we're owing is now coming out. Some is coming out. Everything is coming out from NIS. People that there had the money refused to pay. It is now coming out. All the schools in disrepair is now getting repaired. We got sanitation trucks. We are getting buses. What is going on? But here, why would he talk now? We're improving.
To defend his record.
The bitter pains.
To defend his record.
What record? The bad record he has? The bad record that he has? We never had a prime minister like him before. That's the worst prime minister I ever dealt with in my life.
What made him so bad, in your judgment?
I just told you. He never keep on the topic that we wanted to hear at the day. He came up with insulting remarks about everybody when he comes out. Then he feel like you couldn't get him to speak then. Why would he speak now?
Because, in a sense, isn't this true to form? The same way he led Barbados is the way he is responding now, 2 years later. You understand? That was the criticism, that it took too long to respond to important issues.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you wait 2 years...
2 years.
...to say that you now want to set the record straight, then you play into the hands of those who say, you see what I tell you?
Okay. But
that's
I'm trying to find out...
But there are those who will defend, and I'm keen to hear those who defend. Of course, this program is not dedicated exclusively to the discussion of politics at all, nor, for sure, a discussion about Mr. Stewart, because we have to, at the end of the day, ask the question, how relevant is his presence in the political environment today? And I want to say this, I throw it out for discussion, but I think that former members of the Democratic Labour Party administration are coming up against a perception that they have not yet really come to terms with what happened. And a certain blame game is going on, but there are a lot of people who want to hear more than that. First of all, perhaps a candid examination of where they went wrong in the 10-year period. That, for many people that I've heard speak, would be the start of the process of healing and reconciling. And therefore, it is quite possible that this speech by Mr. Stewart may actually go in that direction. I do not know. There are very few people who know what is in his head until he speaks. And I certainly wouldn't venture to say what I suspect may be in his head. We'll just have to wait and see. But I think it is important that members of the Democratic Labour Party understand that there is still that search for that kind of examination. Because sometimes all you get is the government of the day bamboozled the people, misled them into believing that things were going to be better. It is not better in the eyes of the Dems, and therefore the time is coming when they will be able to march back in just like that. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Thank you very much for your contribution, ma'am.
Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Sometimes that I like to talk about, I was really fascinated by your first caller. But she seems to be going on the road that the Democratic Labour Party, they're not in power right now, and they're trying to get the terms of what happened last election. But let's focus our attention on what's happening in Barbados today. And let me remind that lady. You go to your hospital, the doctor admits you to the ward, you go on a Saturday. These are things that happen, not that I dream of. And you spend about 7 days before they get a bed on the ward for you. So you have to remain in safety. The other thing is, you had the Attorney General, with Frank Price on the program. And every time he comes on this program, he's blaming the last Attorney General, for what happened with the crime situation. My question to you, the 49 homicides that we had last year, it was not committed on the Democratic Labour Party. It was committed on the Barbados Labour Party. And they hold the record for having the most homicides at any one government that led this country in Barbados, especially under the leadership of the Prime Minister, Right Honourable Mayor Amoor Morley. The problem for the Attorney General is to address the crime. He brought in our experts, Mr. Dotting, and Judy Fapp. All he's saying is that there were people who were charged a lot, and the police have solved a lot of the cases. But there were some cases that I have here written down that up to now the boy have been charged for the murder.
How many of them?
About five of them. About five. There are three that I know for certain. One is actually very close to me. Very close. The thing is, the Attorney General, I was wondering if he was on a program like Hard Talk. You know, Stephen would make a mess of him. Or even the girls, that girl that's worked on the BBC. You know, when you come on the program, you come with facts. I don't want to hear what the Democratic Labour Party is. I want to hear what you're doing. And she's talking about this country, she's turning around. Yes, you're turning around. We are turning around for people with more money. But really, in terms of growth, there's no expecting the significant growth this year, nor next year. What is your latest know about? People might be going home later on this year because I began to hear these things and they don't sound very good.
You want my view?
Yes.
Well, you've said a mouthful, but first of all, I live in a world that recognizes that if you have had a difficult economic situation, it is very hard to turn it around overnight.
That's right.
And therefore, the first issue is to look at the key planks of the economy that need to be sorted out. The first point of reference is what you call stabilizing the situation.
Right.
So if your roof is leaking, the first thing that you got to do is to try to stop more water from coming in. And then you fix the roof. And then you look to see how you can improve the situation within the area. Barbados is at the stage now where, having dealt with the issue of the debt to a large extent, we now have to go in the direction of being able to stimulate growth and productivity. And I do subscribe to the view that it is not these huge projects that you need to look to alone, but it is the way that we do business. It is the way that we treat one another when it comes to getting things done, speeding up the process. Simple things like those can make a difference. And when it comes to the question of crime, we have to say that those who have politicized crime in the past, and comments which have been made by the current Attorney General, have strayed into that realm of politicizing it. When you politicize it, it comes back to haunt you, because crime needs more than political intervention. Crime is far deeper than anything, any one thing that the government can do. The government, yes, has to address some policy issues. It has to try to exert some moral suasion to encourage people to be more vigilant, to be more helpful. You know, to look at how we treat one another overall, because ultimately some of those things help to create the environment for people to, you know, become careless and cruel and that sort of thing. But ultimately, it is dangerous to politicize crime. And I want you to go back to the 49 murders last year. And, I mean, I will go back to November of the year before when there was a constitutional motion. And we did have a lot of debate about it. There was a constitutional motion in the Senate, was defeated. And the lawyers said it was going to open up opportunities for people who were charged with murder, more people who were charged with murder, to get bail. And my recollection of what happened is that a number of those people were involved in the shooting incidents that caused this spike in the murders last year. So, I mean, you know, to say, yes, it happened under this watch or that watch is one thing, but to ignore what really helped to drive it is, to my mind, not a useful exercise.
Well, you are saying that, the people, a lot of these people who got bailed were involved in murders, but how do you know that a lot of these people who, friends or relatives, might not even turn to revenge? So it's one, that's one side of it.
Well, I can only go with what was reported at the time. Man, I don't understand how you all can discuss that period and ignore and completely forget that particular sequence of events.
But people not to forget is that you according to what you are saying and according to what these stats that you got, you are saying that people were out there involved in these murders. But as far as I recollect, there were a couple of people which they saw were out on bail.
My friend, let me say to you that even if you turn out to be right in your assessment of that, we still have the broader question of what are some of the factors that are driving more and more people to do the things that they do. You know that we are now at the point where average people seem to go through the red lights.
That is now
standard practice in Barbados. People on bicycles do not appear to stop at red lights, or very few. You know, so these are the types of changes that have been taking place in the country. Today, you begin with people on bicycles and motorcycles. Increasingly, you are going to see people as motorists doing it.
Okay, my last point here, but I'm glad that you mentioned that. And I want to go to my last point again on health. I guess I'll say numbers here, so, and this is my personal friend of mine who will take this operation. And I smile at it, because if you don't have insurance in Barbados, medical insurance in Barbados, God have mercy on you. $60,000 for removal of a breast. You can imagine that.
But that's if you have to do so as a private patient.
I'm talking about being as a private patient.
Yes.
$35,000 for the prostate operation.
Yes.
$10,000 if you just fall down and hurt your fingers and you go to a board specialist, is around $10,000. These are facts.
Yeah, but yesterday, if you listened yesterday evening, you would have heard one of the specialists that deals with this whole question of dialysis and people who are facing kidney disease, make the point that they are looking towards the idea of kidney transplants. And in that area, you can look to the government to pay the costs associated with it. Listen, this is where Barbados is today. And the people who run the hospital need to focus on this particular issue. For too long, there has been confusion about private patients and public patients at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. For too long, some people have been able to use that confusion to their advantage. The Queen Elizabeth Hospital has been losing a whole set of money. It needs the money. It needs to be put on a completely different footing. I have been a journalist for years, and I have heard even from the House of Assembly, various people complain about the system up there. That system is not advantageous to the QEH. It is advantageous to the private doctors who work at the QEH.
The
time has come for Barbados to review that system in a way that the QEH will get its due worth from all that happens there, so that the confusion between public and private should cease. And you know why it becomes even more important? Look through Belleville and see all of these clinics that have arisen in recent years. More and more of them are coming. And therefore, in all of the discussion that has been taking place about the QEH, nobody puts that on the table, because that is the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm. But you see, the people who will get the attention of Belleville Clinic and those other clinics are people who have the resources to do
that. We need to have a conversation about that. It really is important. If we don't do so, you will find increasingly that it is the public patient, the poor person, who is made to pay the price. That price is in the length of time it takes for you to get certain medical procedures done at the QEH. But the person who has the $60,000 or the $40,000 is the person who is going to get it done quickly. No, that cannot be the system that we want to perpetuate in this country. Why don't they deal with that? I want to hear. Okay. We got to go. Thank you very much.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi, good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
Hey, it's Glenn Murray. How are you, sir?
I'm well.
Good. I want to, your piece, I really want to talk about your opening remarks about the political moves that are being made now involving Mr. Church's return to the fray, at least the speaking fray. But I want to mention your last piece about the hospital. The thing you mentioned, all this proliferation of private clinics and whatnot, Sammy Hospital's being spraying from Barbados. But what you didn't mention, as and the relationship with the QEH, is that when there are problems, when there are difficulties at these clinics, the patients invariably have to be sent to the QEH for further attention.
But the clinics are not being set up as acute care clinics. They are, as far as I am aware, most of them are providing certain services, but most of them for sure are not set up as acute care clinics. I know that we have Bayview, for instance, as a hospital, and I think there may be one other institution out there, but even in Belleville, but I don't think that is projected as an acute care clinic.
But if you notice, I was going to add to that, nobody is talking about opening a private hospital.
Well, the private hospital is...
I'll be a full-fledged hospital, a full-fledged hospital.
So why do you think that is important?
Well, because it would offer people options, it would take some of the strain of the QEH, and it would let them, they would be more open to the general public or other people than just turn it down to an exclusive area which they can monopolize and milk for whatever it's worth.
Well,
they're not willing to take the risk of a general hospital.
I really believe that the first order of business is to correct what is wrong at QEH. We will get a much better service to the public if the QEH is more at the center of this whole process, so that you don't have a system where you use the QEH facilities and you don't have a proper costing of all the elements that have gone into that. You know, you benefit, but the QEH, you know, is the loser out of this process.
That is really what has gone on for too many years.
But this is a problem that stems back to the 70s. Remember the days when there were...
But you know, you were in cabinet. You often talk to us about the fact that you sat in cabinet.
Yeah.
And I want you to tell me why, in the period that you all were there, that was untouchable.
Was it? I might not have been touched, but I don't think it was untouchable.
I want to be realistic, you know.
But to say it was untouchable is to say that.
So why wasn't it touched?
I have to think that through. Off the top of my head, I can't guess that. I really can't.
But tell me something. But in all the time, nobody ever saw that as a big problem?
Not that I can recall.
Okay.
They might have, but not that I can recall. I have to be honest here.
All right.
But the point I want to make at this question, there were stories, even when we were journalists in the 70s, of equipment not being found there, the hospital equipment taken elsewhere to provide services and sometimes not even returned. I understand that same things happen now.
Yeah, but see,
it is a real mess that has to be cleaned up. It has to be disciplined, and people have to be made to pay their way if they want to use the facility that the QA is in a proper manner. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
And the people, in my judgment, what I'm saying is that the system has to be one, and other people have the system, you know. There are hospitals elsewhere in the world that operate along the lines that it is the hospital that determines more of what happens with its services and who pays what, rather than having it structured in such a way where it is skewed far more to the private interests than it is to the hospital's interests.
And skewed towards profit making.
Of course. Well, that's a natural, right. It's a natural thing, huh?
Right.
It's a natural thing. But I think what I'm asking for is candor and a realization of part of the crisis that has existed there over the years. We've been along this path all back in the days when Ramsay Scaddle was Minister of Health.
Right.
Remember?
And the second most important man in Barbados talk. When there was supposed to have been a commission of inquiry, and then there was none. Remember that. So it's a problem which has gotten worse over time.
Definitely.
But it needs to be addressed, but you cannot expect the people who benefit from it to address it. They're not going to cut off their own legs.
But then who's to change it then?
The people, the government, the politicians, the political directors.
I want to know whether the persons who are now in charge, from Minister of Health right through, see this as an issue and believe that it needs to be addressed. We are talking all the time about a new hospital and new facilities, but we are not discussing this elephant in the room.
Yeah, you're very right. All right. I want to have a few words on Mr. Stewart's initiative this weekend. And I see it, and at this time when you were talking about it, and I heard your opening remarks, and trying to understand why now, is that this time I wish we had experts or people who were in involved in the field, which is known as psychohistory, where psychologists want to spend time examining the words, actions, speak to their friends and colleagues of personalities, particularly politicians, and try to understand why they have done things and why they do things, why they behave the way they did. But I welcome it because I see it as part of the DLP's seemingly tentative steps of coming back to the public, reestablishing its bona fides with the public. Because you would see that there have been increasingly more public branch meetings taking place. And I see that as part of their recovery, their reemergence. And I therefore see this with Mr. Stewart as part of that. To my mind, it would be foolhardy of him to seek any personal return. But of course, I think he is probably, and I'm speculating, trying to add to that program where the DLP has, reestablished its legitimacy, its respectability, its acceptability, its credibility.
What puts him in the best position to assist in that regard?
Because he would have been there for most of the last 10 years. He was the man in charge. So
but he takes the blame for 30 Love.
me on the night of election, he said he accepted responsibility for that.
But he takes the blame, whether he accepts responsibility or not, isn't the issue. That if he has led the Democratic Labour Party to such a crushing defeat, on what basis can we conclude that he is strong enough and well enough positioned to be one of those to lead the DLP out of this crisis?
But I am not concluding that he's strong enough. All I'm saying is that for an institution that has been around for nearly 65 years now, I think that they have a moral responsibility and obligation in the interest of multi-party democracy in Barbados. You can to tell their story, to reconnect with the public, to resell themselves to the public, to go into whatever processes that are involved.
But that doesn't answer my question. I agree with you in principle, but then the important question is, can it reasonably start with Mr. Stewart?
But Mr. Stewart was the last leader. He should have a role. He should have something to say. I'd be interested in how I want to see how he is going to justify, explain away certain things. I think I would like to hear from him. I mean, it's the whole management thing. The whole management of the country, the whole management of the economy, for example. How will he handle that? I think it's fascinating, and I'd like to hear from him and see that. But I see it wider as helping the DLP, because David, I have been around the DLP when they lost governments on a couple of occasions, and it's a debilitating, devastating, humiliating even effect on the member, on the structure, of the officers, of supporters, and it takes a time before even people even want to walk in public, speak in public, re-emerge in public. This time is worse. Worst defeat ever, and I think it has been worse ever, especially when you coach it with the allegations of corruption and whatnot. So I understand why persons have been reluctant to come out in public and show themselves, be active again. It's going to take time for that to wear away. If they are serious, all will not be able to do it, all should not do it. But I think the institution has an obligation to Barbados and to its supporters and its members to come and play a role again in the future.
It is caught on the horns of a dilemma in this regard. A lot has to do with how close we are from the last general election, because a lot of what has happened is not forgotten by a lot of the public. The people who lost, they themselves they appear to have been in a kind of a state of shell shock to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to understand all that has happened, because I got the impression that the leadership of the Democratic Labour Party was in its own cocoon. It was in a world of its own where it could not relate to what the rest of Barbados was saying. And I don't know that they have actually been able to make that transition yet. So to me,
but the only way we can know that is to let them come to the public and we will see. We will judge them by that.
That is true, but I still ask you whether he is the person to do it.
I think as a leader, he has to have a part of it. I think he has to have a part of it. Otherwise, you will have that vacuum, that blank space, and we will not understand from his perspective as a prime minister how it would have seen, good or bad, right or wrong, at that stage. I think he has to be part of the process. I try to remember now, in 1986, when the Barbados Labour Party got 24-3, how long it took them before people started to emerge. Although I think it was rather short. It was much shorter than this, obviously.
The difference for them was that they had a presence in Parliament.
Uh-huh, right.
And Parliament was used as the platform from where they could relaunch themselves over that period. So the difference here is that the Dems have no presence in Parliament right now. As a matter of fact, what is even worse for the Dems is that they can't get a subvention. They used to depend upon that subvention quite a lot, you know.
All the parties depend on subvention.
Yes.
Even the Barbados.
Precisely.
When Prime Minister Arthur recommended and suggested, there was some objection. Some people said, no, don't let the opposition benefit. And he said, no, that's not the right attitude in the interest of democracy. We will not always be in government. So we have to give a chance to Because say what you like, David, the political class, the political institutions are the ones who really led the charge to the development of Barbados. They have, right and wrong, good and bad, various degrees. Some better than others at various times. But the point is, I think we have to find a way to protect democracy and the multi-party democracy in Barbados. There's no subvention. I think the DLP is awfully struggling. I understand.
All right. So what are you suggesting, if you don't win a seat in Parliament, if you believe in the multi-party democracy as much as you do, then are you making a case for a subvention for a party that is not represented in Parliament?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Barbados has to work a way of looking to see to find where parties can finance themselves out of election time. I think we're working in the interest of the eradication of corruption. I think we have to move to the point where limits are put on spending the parties, and that the public contributes to some of that spending to limit, to help safeguard, so that you don't put your hands yourself, make yourself vulnerable by having to appeal to the private sector for donations, for support, and then possibly compromise yourself as you do business with them. I think we have to move towards that way. We can help to pay for the cost of elections. Otherwise, parties have to find their own way in the interim to finance their day-to-day operations.
Concern, it all depends upon what is in the heart of a man or a woman at the end of the day. People get all the money that they can put their hands on, and they still get involved in all sorts of other things because of the greed and the lust for money.
I understand that, to agree with that. But on the other hand, you can minimize that by lessening the opportunities for persons because campaigns are expensive, horrendously expensive, unnecessarily so, I think. But I think the object of a party really in and out of the trade of empower. And people will do things to get the money to help them win the power. They think we have to understand human nature and make sure we minimize, just like raising a child, you minimize the opportunities for children to be raised improperly and to do foolishness.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hi. Good morning, David.
Yes. Good morning.
I'm sorry. As you can hear, I am not in the best of health, but...
Yeah, you got that bug that so many people have had. I must have had it about 3 weeks ago.
Wasn't it terrible, David?
So many people have been hit by it.
It's a really bad viral, whatever it is, that flu. It's a bad version of it, though. It's very,
yeah,
very bad.
Then it begins as an upper respiratory problem, and then it can become a bronchial infection or pneumonia and stuff like that. So you got to be very careful with that.
Very careful. But I sometimes I get a bit short-winded, so I'll try to say what I have to say, make my point.
Yeah, today is one of these days. It isn't the cat that will cut your tongue, but the cough.
Anyway, I heard the first caller, and I first want to say that as a caller who has asked on this call-in program on more than one occasion for senior members of the former government, ministers in particular, and the Prime Minister and others, to speak on issues, I am particularly pleased to hear that the Prime Minister is going to be addressing certain issues. I heard that first caller, and it was so typical of a certain segment, hopefully small segment, of our society. A lot of misinformation, a lot of propaganda and nonsense points. And I was disappointed that you didn't correct some of the things she said. For example, she said Ms. Motley has turned around the economy and now he wants to come and speak. She said Mr. Stewart never spoke and apologized for, you know, what went wrong in the country. The night of the election, he accepted the responsibility and he apologized. Then I think it's the 12th of August.
What did he apologize for?
I can't tell you the exact words
because I thought that he accepted responsibility for the defeat. But having accepted responsibility for the defeat, ma'am, I don't know that was the opportunity to delve into more detail as to where he considered that they had gone wrong. I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, but you would expect on the night of an election that somebody's going to go in.
No, so 2 years later we can hear it now.
He said he did not address it. the point I want to make is that Barbadians have to be very, very careful that we don't end up being a low information society. And by that I mean, before Mr. Stewart could come and say anything, or if we hear Dennis Lowe is going to say something, or Chris Sinclair, oh, jump, everybody, why are you talking? We won't hear nothing from him. Why didn't he say something before? And I'm saying to them, in this country where there is no opposition, where the media does not prosecute in a strenuous way this government and some of the things they're doing, we need to hear all ideas, all positions, and all information be placed on the table, that all the ideas contend, and persons can learn. So I am saying to Mr. Stewart, hurrah, you're coming out and you're going to speak. Some will accept, some will not accept. But I'm saying to Barbadians who are listening, do not let persons influence you with that nonsense that we don't want to hear nothing and what went on in the past, etc. Because I believe there are some things that they have to speak on and why they didn't do X, Y, and Z, go to the IMF, whatever, whatever. But at the same time, I believe they're going to be able to challenge a lot of the narrative that has been put out there for almost 2 years by this government. Some of the things that they've said, which is obvious misinformation. Let me give you an example. For almost a year and a half, the prime minister, moderators, callers, supporters kept saying, the last government never bought one garbage truck. That was an obvious lie. The DLP sat back and said nothing. Eventually, the information was brought forward that it was not true. It was corrected and quietly went under the table and nobody said anything. It was like nothing, you know, just forget it. Move right on. And I'm saying that we have to be careful because Mr. Stewart is the right person to speak on this, on certain issues. I heard Derek Aline. I believe Derek Aline is a person, political strategist, and I believe he is important for him to speak. I think Chris Sinclair needs to get out of his bed and start to address certain key issues because our country is in a terrible state. This is what the Barbados Today, February 12, 2020 article state, Peter Wickham and Professor Bell. But here, the article by Colvin Munsey says, the slew of taxes and user fees implemented by the Mayor Motley administration are emerging as the first real kinks in a seemingly impenetrable political armor, says political scientist. Wickham said that since Labour's capture of all 30 seats in the May 2018 elections, there is no evidence of trepidation among the public regarding some of the party's policies which are being viewed as burdensome in harsh economic times. I am saying to Barbados, we need to hear from the Democratic Labour Party. We need to accept who want to come back. Let the Democratic Labour Party decide who they want to choose as their leaders, and not the supporters.
Yeah, highly selective though, but what you're quoting Mr. Wickham as saying in that article, didn't go on to say something else?
Oh, he said, oh yeah.
He and Dr. Bell?
Yeah, he criticized them and say that they don't, they must first represent the people. But the reason I said that, because, no, I deliberately chose that that quote because, remember I said the lady came on and talked about how this thing has been, this country has been turned around and things going so well. So I use that quote to show.
Well, I suppose when they say that it's being turned around, they're listening to the assessment that has been coming from the International Monetary Fund. They're looking at the upgrades that we've had from Standard & Poor's.
How many?